When we met, you were having a little bit of a rough time. I think you we had met at the Triangle Club in Atlanta, trying to get better, and then you kind of through some friends and I, we worked up an old car, I think, and then you ended up. I got a call one day, and you were down in the Bluff. And my sponsee, a friend of mine, Joe, was, hey, it was busy. He said, can you go get him? So Reed was in the Bluff, which is written about in rap songs in Atlanta. It's some parts of it the police don't even go into. And so anyway, I went down to find him in the back room in this house. And I knocked, saw the fellas out front, told them I wasn't there for anything bad or official. I was just looking for a guy. So they pointed you out, and you were in the back room, and I either pushed the door in or unlocked it or kicked it in or something, and you were in rough shape at that point. Very dehydrated, and vodka bottles around, and you were in very bad shape. But anyway, what was going through your mind then?
Well, it was the downtime from work. You know, anytime I'd get more than a couple days off, that was perfect opportunity to just tie one on. So, and then once I really started drinking, I just couldn't stop. I would just lay there like a lump on a log and just drink. Wake up, drink, eat a little something, go back to sleep. Wake up, drink, go back to sleep. Just a worthless existence. You know, it just, I had a job, even had a car through some of that. Lost a few, bought a few, and just, the cycle just would not stop. The cycle would just get worse and worse and worse.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Am I online?
You're online.
All right. Welcome to Santa Rosa Beach, Florida, and we're here at Eden State Park. Beautiful little park on the Bayside. If you're not familiar with the area, we're down here next to Seaside, about a half an hour, 45 minutes from Destin. Anyway, today we're here filming a good friend of mine, Reed. What we're going to do is ask Reed a few questions and allow him to tell his story from a recovery perspective, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I met Reed how many years ago now?
About five.
5 years ago, and he's been doing a great job in sobriety, and life is coming together. He's helped on several construction projects. Place up in North Georgia, and a house that we worked on together across from the Bill Wilson house in East Dorset, Vermont. So, you know, not my day job, but I do put a lot of time into building certain buildings out to either house apartments or recovery centers, things like that. And Reed has been a mainstay, really supporting that effort. So, with that, want to introduce Reed.
Hello. Reed, this is hard for me. I'm sure I'll get more comfortable as it goes, but here we are.
All right. Well, we've had our, you just like everybody in recovery, we've had our battle with drugs and alcohol over time, and wanted to just ask you a few questions and set you up to tell your story. I think you've turned out to be just an incredible example in recovery to a lot of people. I'm proud of you, and
appreciate
I love
it.
You.
Thank you. And you too, brother.
And you do have a unique story, so why don't you give me a little background on what it was like in your household growing up and when you first started drinking or messing around with stuff.
Well, I guess I started drinking about 16. My mother had this, I grew up in a single mother household, one brother. She had this idea that if we were drinking at home, we were safe. So she allowed it to go on. She even bought it for us, and it certainly wasn't a problem for a long, long time after that. But, you know, beer was never, seemed like a bad thing to do at the time, and that's it.
When did it start to become a problem with you?
I guess about 25, maybe. I was in a motorcycle club, and it just got to be my best friend, more or less, and kind of got me through the day, and it stayed with me for a long time. And I guess it didn't really get really bad until I was married about 14 years, and it got to the point where I just couldn't be without it every day, you know, could not get through the day without it, period.
You think, I guess I never thought of it, but do you think most of the guys in the motorcycle club were alcoholic, or is that a common theme there, or they're just more outlaws than alcoholics?
Well, there were a few problem drinkers, maybe 4 or 5 out of about 20. But drugs and alcohol were just part of everyday life. You know, everybody did it. Half of them sold it. So it was real easy to get. And nobody really cared what you did around there. It was kind of no holds barred, do what you want. As long as you're loyal and honest, that's about the only few rules we had.
How'd you get started in a motorcycle gang?
Club. The friends I was hanging out with at the time, around 18, 19, a few of them went up to a clubhouse, and I went a few times and just fell in love with it. Thought it was the greatest thing ever. Couldn't believe they would ever accept me. And then when they suggested I try to give it a shot, I was just amazingly honored. You know, I couldn't believe that these people would accept me. And sure enough, they did. And hell, I wound up being an officer after a few years.
Wow. Well, what did you have to do for initiation and stuff? How do they know that you're, like, you know, tough enough material for their club?
Well, you get out in the middle of other people and opportunity usually presents itself. You know, they just want to see if you're loyal and honest and somewhat tough. And
yeah,
if you don't just run away and cry when first time somebody punches you in the face, you know, and they never really set it up, but opportunity was there plenty of times.
Yeah, but even in that club, you had to have character.
Sure. I mean,
it sounds like.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the tests came from other brothers. You know, they're going to feel you out and see what you like and make sure you don't just lay in the corner and do drugs all night. That wasn't really allowed either.
Yeah.
You know, you got to stay up, stay on your toes, and you're around other people. You're representing the club, and you got to act in somewhat of an honorable way.
So your drinking got worse through the club period, and then you met your wife while you were drinking pretty regularly, right?
Yeah. Once I left the club, it was all about work. You know, I was in the construction, and still am in the construction industry. And most of the people around us at the site were all Hispanics, you know. And once the club scene was done, I wanted to get married and have kids. So people were coming out of the woodworks to introduce me to their sisters and daughters and stuff like that. And it didn't take long, and I found one, married her, started having kids.
Mm. All right, and you got 3 kids right now.
3 kids right now.
Natalie, who's turning 9 soon?
She will be 11 in June.
11. Boy, that was quick.
Yeah.
And Steven, who helps Reed and I on different projects. He was just down here for a week, and Reed's building a house here in Seaside for me. And then Jesse, who has worked on the house up in Vermont and other places, and he is now working in Nashville, just graduated from college and working at a hospital or a research center.
He is working at a research center. It's his second job since he's graduated from Georgia Southern with a degree in biochemistry. And the first job he had was not much more than a receptionist in a medical center. But now he's actually using his education in the research place. I'm not exactly sure what he does there, but it was a very big deal for him. He didn't think he would be accepted, and he did. And he's loving life right now.
You know, your kids generally don't have that kind of success unless the parents have character. Even though they may be drinking, they always either made them work or made them do something. So you had something going on through that period, as well as your wife, to produce such good kids. And I've gotten to know them. So congratulations on that. So moving forward, so your drinking started to progress. Were you drinking every day? And what were you drinking?
Yes, every day. I mean, I managed to go 8 hours of a work day without drinking. But I did a lot of exercise, and I actually would drink a 24-ounce beer after my workout every morning on a regular basis. And then I'd go my 8 hours of work, and then it was straight to the vodka, you know, just like it was apple juice. You know, at least a half pint on my way home from work. And that just to get me home.
Every night?
Every day.
Wow. And then it progressed. Problems with the law or leaving your family? What happened as all the alcoholism started to take control?
Well, it just got to where I turned into a lazy bum. I have a pretty good work ethic. Work doesn't scare me at all. But, you know, it got to where the drinking just wasn't enough. And I could maintain it most days of the week. But, you know, fourth or fifth day, I'd have to just tie one on. Of course, then I'd miss work. I've already missed work. So let's drink, you know. And the cycle would just continue, and it would take days to get over it, just to get back down to a maintenance level of drinking. And it was just, it completely took over, and I battled like that for years.
And you're a man after my own heart, and you'd like nice, cheap, warm vodka, just like I do. Easy access, doesn't need to be refrigerated, and plentiful and cheap. When we met, you were having a little bit of a rough time. I think you we had met at the Triangle Club in Atlanta, trying to get better, and then you kind of, through some friends and I, we worked up an old car, I think, and then you ended up, I got a call one day, and you were down in the Bluff, and my sponsee, a friend of mine, Joe, was, hey, it was busy, so can you go get him? So Reed was in the Bluff, which is written about in rap songs in Atlanta. It's some parts of it the police don't even go into. And so anyway, I went down to find him in the back room in this house, and I knocked, saw the fellas out front, told them I wasn't there for anything bad or official. I was just looking for a guy. So they pointed you out, and you were in the back room, and I either pushed the door in or unlocked it or kicked it in or something, and you were in rough shape at that point, very dehydrated, and vodka bottles around, and you were in very bad shape. But anyway, what was going through your mind then?
Well, it was the downtime from work. You know, anytime I'd get more than a couple days off, that was perfect opportunity to just tie one on. So, and then once I really started drinking, I just couldn't stop. I would just lay there like a lump on a log and just drink. Wake up, drink, eat a little something, go back to sleep. Wake up, drink, go back to sleep. Just a worthless existence. You know, it just, I had a job, even had a car through some of that, lost a few, bought a few, and just the cycle just would not stop. The cycle would just get worse and worse and worse.
Well, I remember you stayed in my car for a little while, and then we ended up going up to Such's farm up in North Georgia, where some other guys were sober and up were, and they helped you out, and you stayed there for a while, and after a couple of weeks you started to get some of your strength back and started doing helping us with some construction projects and that kind of stuff with other people in recovery. How'd you feel then? You started to get a little bit of hope, or what was different this time about it?
Well, that time, you know, I needed someone to more or less handcuff me to a tree to get me to stop drinking. You know, and I subconsciously, even consciously, wanted it and needed it, because I knew I could not do this on my own. You know, but who's going to do that to a person? That's not the way it works. But more or less, Dean kidnapped me. That's the way I tell it. He kidnapped me,
awesome.
Brought me to his farm and just dropped me off. You know, they stayed up there the weekend, and I'd gotten sober somewhat, and then he left, just kind of left me there. No car, no job, no money, nothing. But it was exactly what I needed, you know. And
there was a couple other people there, so it wasn't like a
yeah. I wasn't empty stranded. Basement. I wasn't stranded in a dangerous way, but
feeding him and giving him a beer or two, so he didn't have the shakes too bad coming off of it.
Right, you know, and sometimes my withdrawals can be pretty serious. I've had 3 seizures that I can remember. And, yeah, I definitely need to wean off. But it, you know, it worked. You know, I think I've relapsed 1 time since then. But just that, I don't know how to say it, the strength of that, having to be kidnapped and brought up somewhere and just left. You know, that's the way it made me feel anyway. He didn't actually just leave me there. We were in contact over the phone. I wasn't in a dangerous place, but
I certainly had a couple of caretakers there that were sort
I certainly of couldn't walk care. To walk anywhere and get some more booze. And that was the best thing. Because even in the Bluffs, you can walk somewhere and get booze. Only white boy there, but you can still get booze pretty easily.
Well, then we were up there, and we worked on a couple other projects together here and there and in Dahlonega. I do a music festival up there every year, and you helped on that. Kind of got to know some other people, and all of a sudden, you had a lot of contacts. You were part of a community.
Yeah.
That helped. A few other ups and downs from there, but... and then you started to really become a student of the program, spending more time hitting a meeting every day, working on the steps, trying to get sponsees, working with other alcoholics, and really, you know, we just talked about that this morning. You got to the point where you're at the jumping off point. And why don't you describe that for me, when you were really ready?
Well, it was really, I was really ready when you finally took me up to the farm. But it just, the point got to where I can't live without drinking, and I can't live with drinking. I have nowhere to go. I don't know what to do. Go on to the bitter end? I mean, I know that's proverbial, but, you know, we read about that stuff every day at meetings. But it was literally like that. I don't know where to live, where to go. You know, it basically came to a decision of to go on and die or try to live. You know, and thank God I chose life. But I really had to make that decision of whether or not life or death. And life meant listening and learning and doing shit that I don't want to do to figure out how to get sober. And it's that simple for me.
We packed up a van, and I was talking about this before. On the back of the van, we put the letters, Tabernacle of the Holy Mackerel, in hopes of not getting pulled over because we were going to speed all the way up to Vermont with 5 guys going through the steps and myself in the car. And mix of people, some older, some younger. And we went up to the house across from the house where Bill Wilson was born. And it's a retreat center, another Wilson house. And we worked on that place for a while. Went to a meeting every night, got up for breakfast every day and stayed to it. Everybody worked on their step work. And that kind of stuff, and you staying at it and being so diligent about the program and your program, I think it that kind of stuff as a liftoff or like a rocket engine taking you off, and then staying with it over time and having community and being able to express yourself. Also cleaning up some of the stuff from the past, just
right.
Using the steps like they're supposed to be used, and you're getting the rewards now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm living a great life now, but it was a rough process. You know, and I needed the evidence. As alcoholics, we need evidence of whatever. We need to see it, touch it, feel it. And I didn't believe that God was going to help me. I believed in God, but I just didn't believe he was going to come into my life and help me. You know, until I saw the evidence. Once I saw some little shred of evidence, I was convinced this works. You know, I'm on the bottom. I got a long way to go, but this program works. And I was sold. You know, and now I eat, live, and breathe it. Can't get enough of it. I probably don't do as much working with others as I should, but I never turn down an opportunity. So it's there, and somebody else takes care of my life for me. I don't have to be the boss anymore. I just kind of sit back and let things happen, and it's a wonderful life. I still do the same things I've always done. I work construction. I get in the mud, do plumbing, carpentry, frame heavy-ass houses, And it's hard work, and it's nowhere near got any glory in it. I get to look back and look at my work. That's wonderful. But now everything is different. I can appreciate when things go together well, and I have a day and nothing goes bad. I just appreciate every moment now, and I've never even experienced that before. And it's great.
How are the relationships with your family, your mom, brother, other people, and how are they different than how things used to be?
Well, they actually want me around now. You know, they didn't want anything to do with me for quite a while, even my own kids. And that's, you know, I've gotten through it, but I may never get over that, because my kids stopped trusting me. They stopped believing in me. They just were more or less watching me die. And I can't believe I did that to them, but I did. I made the choice. And it's getting a lot better now. My kids can't wait to come see me. You know, they can't wait to come swing a hammer with me. They love it. You know, my little girl isn't quite old enough to swing a hammer yet, but she'll get her share. And my brother, my mother never really did leave me. But she did enable me somewhat, but she had no idea. She was just doing her best to take care of her baby boy. But the rest of them, they didn't want anything to do with me. Come back when you sober up. You know, and it wasn't just get 30 days and come back. You need to prove it to us, because we don't trust you, we don't like you, we don't want you around. And it was that simple. But now they're inviting me up all the time for Christmas, Easter, all that stuff. You know, I don't go as much as I should, but it's nice to be invited, that's for sure.
And my family loves him too. I mean, we went up to Vermont, where I'm originally from, so he got to have Thanksgiving and some other meals with my family, and his children are up there too, so they consider him part of the family now as well. And when we're living a good life, these unions between people just take place, and they get stronger over time. For alcoholics, I think we run from that. So you're a really, really, you're a shining example of what life can become and how we can evolve to what we naturally should be. This summer, we're getting ready to go on a trip. We're going to put the house kind of on mothballs here for a couple of months, and we're going to head out to Montana. This crazy project that we have out there is right on the Yellowstone River, and we're going to have some alcoholics out there with us, some young guys, and trying to create some conversions while we're there, or just at least show them what we did to get sober. So are you excited about that?
Sure. I mean, Montana's a long way off. It's about a 4-day trip driving, and it is out in the middle of nowhere. I don't think there's any building material stores nearby or anything.
Half
like
hour
that,
away, 45 minutes away.
I'm used to dealing with that kind of stuff, and I hope we do bring some guys trying to get into the program. So far, we don't have anybody lined up. My son Steven is going. He's the 17-year-old, but he loves it. He can't wait to go. Loves little adventure. Likes that internet, but other than that, he's a pretty adventuresome kid. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting out of the heat in Florida, that's for sure, because it gets hot summer down here.
Well, I appreciate the time. I think we've come to the end of our storytelling. I know it was a condensed version, but I appreciate you going through it. And I'm very glad to have you part of my life. And I'm proud of you. And I'm proud for you. And just to see how you've done it and staying at it. And with the commitment that you have toward the program, your life's going to continue to expand, get bigger, and you're going to have more love in your life and more people. And I look forward to being right next to you, watching it all happen.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you being in my life. You've made a huge difference. I mean, all I needed back then was just someone to care about me for 5 minutes. It's all I needed. You know, I didn't know that at the time, but that is what I needed. And you were there, brother. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. That's what we do. So.
That was 30 minutes already?
I think that was 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Was it about 30 minutes?
23.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I have one question that you said you wanted to see the evidence. What was the evidence that you saw?
Well, just learning how to let go and let decisions, not really decisions, but instead of me worrying about basic problems that come up every day, sit back and let it happen. And every time it got better. You know, once I let go and decided to just do whatever the hell they tell me in this program, it works. My problem before was I'm doing it the way I want to do it. You know, I was, you know, I'm not going to pray to something I don't believe that's going to work. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to talk about all the smut in my life. How's that going to help? But I actually started doing it. I started feeling better immediately. And I started seeing that if I just get out of my own way and stop worrying about every little thing that happens to me every single minute of the day, things just happen a lot better than I actually plan them to go. And that's just been proven to me over and over and over. Yeah. And it's my life was a mess. My head was a mess. And that's part of where the cycle came from. I just, the anxiety would build and build and build. And I couldn't get over it. Yeah. I would drink. But once I let it go for a while, suffered a little bit, and realized that this shit is going to go on with or without me. If I can either enjoy the ride or leave my head full of crap. And I decided to enjoy the ride, and it's great. It's been a great ride so far. And they keep, everybody keeps telling me it's going to get better and better. Hell, I'm pretty damn happy now. And I didn't even understand what happiness was for the first 8 months or a year in my sobriety. It would just happen, and I like, shit. I didn't drink. No, I didn't drink today. Why do I feel so good? And it was happiness. I didn't understand that shit at the beginning. Now I do, and I don't want to go back. That's for sure.
Yeah. Wow.
It's kind of funny. Staying out of the results business, like they always say, and doing the hard work and just letting it go. And the evidence that you letting it go actually would work out better than if you had your fingernails in it, you know? And, yeah, that's a common theme that you hear about in the program. And then really just allowing that to happen is faith, that there is some kind of a overlord. You know, it's the thing is watching. It's taking care of us, and it knows better than I do, you know?
I depend on it all day long. You know, when I see something going wrong, all right, you know, where you at? I need, something needs to happen. If I get all involved and get mad, probably gonna go wrong. And sure enough, on a daily, hourly, minutely basis, things just work out and go better for me all the time.